What's up and welcome back to Hot Shots. I'm Jedi, and with me always is Houdini and Deepa. What's poppin', boys?
It's good to see your faces. How we doing?
What's good, fellas? Doing great. How you boys doing?
Doing well. I got myself like a little bit of a tan, I was out at the beach all weekend at Tortuga Music Festival.
Mr. Tortuga himself.
It was a good time.
I can't think of Tortuga without Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one.
That's right. That's right. There's a reason why I like that name.
Yeah, it's a great name.
Jedi, favorite artist that you saw?
Oh, definitely BZ, Bailey Zimmerman. But second on that was Hardy, because Hardy is just an absolute rock star and like probably one of the coolest dudes I've ever met. Like, you ever meet somebody though to where you're just like, this dude, he's just cool. Like, there's no other thing to say. Like, he's just I want to be him.
I've met Houdini before.
Okay, I mean, yeah, you threw me off right there when you ended it with, like, I want to be them. Because the coolest dude I ever met was Henry Winkler, which, Jedi, you don't know him by name. Yeah, you don't know him by
yes,
name.
I do. But it's the Fonz. I know who he is. He's also in Barry.
He's also true. The coach in Waterboy. And I met this dude at the Rose Bowl and literally just screamed. He was just walking down the road. I screamed, Fonz! And he turned around and was like, hey, how you doing? Nice to meet you. How's everything going? I was like, I love this guy. I didn't want to be him. You know what I mean? Like, that's where you threw me off.
Yeah, that might be a little bit of an over-exaggeration. Like, would I really want to be someone else? No, I like being myself. But what I mean, though, is, like, you appreciate them. Like, you think, like, this dude's, like, the coolest person in the world. Just, like, the way their persona and the way they go about right. Everything.
Yeah, I mean, I would want to be Juan Soto. You know what I mean?
Wouldn't we all? This offseason, I'd love to be Juan Soto.
Yeah, after this offseason, yes. I'd
love to be Mika Zibanejad, dude. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
there's a lot to talk about, though, in the baseball world. Pitchers' injuries. We'll start with this. Hide your aces. Hide your pitchers. Hide anybody with an arm, because nobody can keep their UCL intact in the MLB anymore. It seems like everybody has been getting hurt. Tommy John is on the rise, elbow soreness. No one really knows why. Pitchers have recently been having elbow problems or season-ending TJ. A few names to list: Spencer Strider, Yuri Perez, Shane Bieber, Garrett Cole has arm problems, Framer Valdez, Josiah Gray, Nick Pivetta, guys that already have had TJ within the last year that are pretty notable: Sandy Alcantara, Shane McClanahan, and Shohei Ohtani. This is getting crazy to where it's like there's like no good pitchers that are like healthy. They're all hurt.
Wrap them in bubble wrap.
It's getting to a point where I don't know. I'll be honest. Everybody's approaching it, and I keep seeing it in the comments saying, like, we need to stop putting the pitch clock and saying that, oh, the pitch clock is the reason why all of this is happening. I don't think that's the problem. Because, and I understand that, yes, like, you're going at a faster pace, and, you know, there's a lot of force behind it, but the human body is not meant to throw 90 miles an hour to begin with. And there are guys throwing 102 constantly. I think that's more the problem, to where guys are focusing so much on how hard can I throw a 5-ounce baseball. And at some point, your arm is going to tear down. And I think now you're starting to see it where everybody's just been focusing on velo and it's catching up.
Yeah. So I have a couple things here. One is the comments that Tyler Glasnow said the other day, which, if you haven't seen it, look it up. His theory, and I'll talk about his theory a little bit, and then I'll talk about my theory a little bit. Tyler Glasnow's theory is the second you took away some sort of substance for pitchers to use, spider tack, rosin, sunscreen, whatever, pine tar, whatever any pitcher used, you used to be able to pull a baseball out of their fingertips no problem. Now when they go throw, they're choking the shit out of it. In his case, adds more stress to the forearm and that UCL ligament. So to his theory, the more for Glasnow to be able to effectively throw his curveball, he has to grip the absolute hell out of that baseball. That's going to cause stress. My theory is, and there's a study that's trying to be done on this, is why back in the day was there less Tommy John, right? And where you touch on the velo chasing and all that stuff, let's think about it. Let's analyze it. In the pros, you chase velo, right? If you're in college, want to go pro, you have to increase velo, okay? You're a high schooler, want to go play in college, you want to increase velo. Now it's gotten down to like the point where like these perfect game tournaments are doing you know, fastest throws at 9, 10, 11 years old, you know? So when you start adding up the velocity, the study that's being done is the 90s pitchers to now is no one's talking about the damage on the UCL that's being done on throwing an object at the velocity that it's thrown at. That's kind of the X factor. So a guy that Greg Maddux throwing 90, 92 in his prime.
If that, Dino, if that, that.
Right.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, he did. But like I'm saying, like on average, he was probably 90, 91, 89 and 91. You know what I mean? Like, but he threw five pitches wherever he wanted. Let me sum this up. My point is do we have data on throwing a 5 ounce object at 100 miles an hour versus throwing a 5 ounce object at 90 miles an hour, right? Like, do we have that data? To me, that's the most glaring thing is the harder that you're throwing this object, the more likely you are to blow out, especially with limited rest, especially on the same 5 day rest schedule as what they had in the 90s. And I feel like this is not a surprise. If you follow baseball from youth all the way through, it is very, very obvious that this problem was bound to happen.
Yeah, exactly. I immediately go to youth baseball and, you know, hearing about it for a while now, kids and parents to the extent being hyper-focused on baseball, on one sport. And it's in other sports too. It's not just baseball. And when you get hyper-focused in something and you're not playing other sports throughout, you know, throughout the year and using other parts of your body, you're bound to run into it. That's a great point, Houdini. A couple points that I wanted to bring up too. The average velocity on the fastball over the past 15 years has gone up almost like 3.5 or 4 miles an hour, which is a crazy amount over a short period of time. Houdini, you kind of spoke about the data. Like, do we need the data? I think the data is right in front of us. We're seeing it right now. You can go back 10 years. You can go back 15, 20, however long we want, you know, until TJ really became, you know, very popular. They're on the rise and the fastball velocity is on the rise. You hit all the points all the way through high school, college. Like, that's what gets scouts' attention. That's what gets you to the league. That's what gets you to your goal. I think part of it, kind of what is lost too, is the art of pitching. You brought up Greg Maddux. That's a great example. Even towards the end of his career, pitchers used to be able to pitch. And I'm not saying that there aren't dudes who can shove and put 100 on the black and break you off a curveball too, but the art of pitching and not throwing 100% every single pitch because you have to, being able to get through it at 80%, 90%, and then every once in a while when you need to kind of tone it up, you can. But the art of pitching has gone away, and it's just turned into velo. It's turned into velo and home runs and strikeouts.
In 2019, 29.8% of the pitchers in Major League Baseball had Tommy John surgery. In 2024, that number has rose to 34.2%, and it continues to increase every single year. So TJ obviously is on the rise. We love conspiracy theories on this podcast. And honestly, the more that I thought about this over the weekend, when I saw this news coming out of more and more guys having this elbow soreness, and that's obviously leading towards some sort of maybe not a tear, but problem in that UCL area, is that I think Rob Manfred is screwing around with the baseballs, because baseballs are also getting hit out a lot more this year than they did last year. And I think that they might be juiced again a little bit. I don't know if he's messing with the type of baseball and where it's made or any of that. I mean, they seem to be doing stuff with the pants. We saw Riley Green today, his pants split in half on a slide.
Exploded, yeah.
Oh, wow. So did we hit the over-under? We'd have to go back and check.
On how many games?
I think one of you said under 10 games.
We're right about 10, too.
Yeah, I said first slide, so I know I'm out.
But you know, we saw that. We see the jersey problems. It wouldn't surprise me if Manfred went and did something with the baseballs and is not saying anything, because I feel like that's just a move that he would do, because he's always trying to finagle and change situations around the league.
Well, that is – Glasnow brought that up, was the first six balls you get are rubbed up nice.
Yep.
After that, when you're throwing them back in, it's just chalky. So that's why you're probably going to see an increase in hit by pitches as well. Problem with – baseball right now is the false narrative of the adjusted time clock and the pitch clock and all that type of stuff. That has nothing to do with it. You throwing an object 12 seconds apart, 18 seconds apart, it has no effect on you throwing the object versus the velocity of which you're throwing it at. If I throw a tennis ball against a wall for 12 hours a day at 5 seconds in between, I'm not going to blow my arm out. If I take that same tennis ball and every 15 seconds I throw it as hard as I possibly can, eventually my arm will break down. So,
and Dino, you hit on a point too with Glasnow, saying he has to grip the ball harder to control it. And that's a problem, like in any sport. Like, you never want to do anything at, you know, full, you know, grip. Like, you want to be loose, you want to be athletic. And whenever you're gripping it like that, you're not being loose and athletic. You're straining muscles. Jedi, you brought up your forearm muscles leading directly into the UCL. Like, it's bound to happen.
The final point I want to make is, if you are, and Jedi, I'll use you for an example, 90-91, which I think is pretty accurate. If I told you need to do a throwing, a weighted ball program, X, Y, and Z, you got to do this, this, and this to get to 96, 97. And you know that you're in the final year of your career. There's nothing coming after. But if you get to 96, 97, you'll probably get picked up. Are you doing it?
Of course. And I think that's what every player goes into, because this is their life.
And that's where I think the main issue is. If you're on the last leg, your last year, if you're in AAA, you can't get to the pros. If you're a high schooler that has no options, it's either go to school or play baseball somewhere. Like, if you're on your last possible option, then I support chasing the velo. But if you're chasing the velo for 8 to 10 years, it's going to blow out.
Well, it kind of transitions us into the next topic that's very relevant to this. With all of the injuries, with all the pitching injuries throughout Major League Baseball, is Trevor Bauer eventually going to get signed in spite of all this news? There are now a boatload of teams that need pitching, could use Trevor Bauer. I feel like we've been talking about this multiple times, but it keeps coming up. I'll say my opinion. No, I don't think he gets signed, which sucks. I mean, we're all on this podcast. All three of us agree that Trevor Bauer should be playing in Major League Baseball, but it's a matter of, like, do you actually think it's going to happen? I'm going to go say no, just because it hasn't happened yet. And the fact that he hasn't even gotten a chance for a minor league deal, and he's pitched against the Yankees, he pitched against the Dodgers, I don't think it's ever going to happen. I think it's over.
I have been on this podcast multiple times, and I have said that he will never pitch in the pros again. I am pivoting, and I'm saying that he's going to. You have low market teams right now that are off to a hell of a start. I think this is the opportunity for clubs, and I'm not going to be specific here, but I'm just going to point out two, right? The Pirates are off to a ridiculous start. I don't see them doing it. But then you start going and looking at, like, Cleveland, who's like 8-2 or 9-2.
Just lost Biebs.
Just lost Bieber. I could see it happening there.
It's funny that you pivot, because for months you've said he's never going to pitch in the league. You're right. And I said, no, talent will outweigh it. I honestly, I'm pivoting from that. I don't think he'll do it because of that. Because of, he's a $850,000 flyer. It's not like we're, you know, negotiating with Scott Boras here and he's looking for millions and, you know, extended term. He's looking for, like, a bus ticket, essentially. And he still hasn't been signed. He dealt against the Dodgers. He dealt against the Yankees. Still hasn't been signed. I think it's a concerted effort by Manfred and MLB to blackball him. I don't think he ever pitches again in the league.
Yeah, I think he's blackballed. I think it's all coming down from Manfred. They obviously don't have a great relationship whatsoever at all. And, you know, honestly, all the comments that I keep seeing in all of our videos is most of the people, you know, like, I would say 80% of the people agree with us that he deserves a chance to get a chance to play. They're not saying that he should be the ace with what we've been saying. Like, we don't think that. We just think that he deserves a shot. And everybody seems to be on board with that. And then you have the 20% that are just kind of making it a little bit too opinionated, to where a lot of the comments have been, he's a jerk, I don't like him, his personality. And it's like, real well, you know, his personality really has nothing to do with him getting a shot to play. So it seems like everybody should be on board at this point, because a lot of the comments in our YouTube section has not been about the domestic violence dispute.
Yeah,
I think is worth noting. A public perspective on all of our comments. I mean, we're talking, like, you know, 200-300 comments that we've gotten on this kind of stuff.
No, right. 100%. And I agree with you, is you can dislike someone's image all you want. Mm-hmm. Right. And Jeter said this the other day, like, his image is not who he is. his image is what the public portrays him as, is how he carries himself, but that's not who he is. So they can say whatever they want about Trevor Bauer. They don't like him. They don't. His talent is there. If he gets blackballed for this, it's because of not only the incident, I'll call it, because it's not like he was arrested for it. So the incident, the videos about the spider attack and how sunscreen and rosin does the exact same effect, and Manfred having, you know, just a bad relationship with him. Like I said, if he doesn't pitch in pro ball again, I was the first one to say it the day after it came out. I'll still say I told you so. I just feel like this year when
you're, way you can tell us you told you so.
Yeah, 100%. But when you're looking at this one, like in this situation in 2024, people have to put, I know it's, I mean, it's a win-win for me, dude. I just hedged my bet. I can't lose. But my point is this, you don't need to like him. You don't need to respect him. It's a business and you're not the ones running the business.
And all I'm saying is, said you're fired.
And if the people, and if there's a one business team out there that can convince Manfred that, hey, this is a smart move for our business, especially a low market team, it's going to get a lot of publicity, a lot of attention, who might be in first place at the time. I could see this happening.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen, but you do bring up good points. Bronny James declares for the NBA draft. One thing. What are you declaring for, buddy?
I declare bankruptcy.
Yeah, is that just like a statement? Like,
yeah, it I mean, is.
Yeah, it's a just okay, a
declaration. So honestly, it's a question for him if he ever sees this.
Okay, I thought this was going to be like a dialogue, but it just seemed like you were just period right there.
Yeah, no, that was it. That was all it was. All
right, yeah.
I do the one comment I will make too is at least nowadays, once you declare, I think if you don't sign with an agent, you can still go back to school.
Yes. And that's the circumstance I do that like he's that. In.
So I hope that this is just a declaration that he put out there. Maybe a team picks him up undrafted. Like
Even then it's still dumb because it's like, dude, look at your, like, I don't have his stats in front of me, but I don't even have to know them because I know how bad they are at USC. I mean, like, what are we talking about? Declaring for what? You're not good.
The G League.
Did he even start there? I don't even think he started there. Like, what are we declaring for?
Hold on. Before we start bashing him, he didn't start because of the heart issue.
Okay.
Was he going to start even there?
Even then, he, like, look at his stats. He wasn't that good.
I agree with you. I said a couple weeks ago, if he declares, he'll go undrafted.
I just want to say, I'm not saying that, like, is he, like, not talented at all? No, he's talented. But is he talented enough right now in his career to where he should be declaring for the NBA draft? Not at all.
No, but so it's a smart move on his part for two reasons. One is his coach left. He's going to go do all the NBA workouts, and he's going to gauge the interest from NBA teams. Obviously, every team knows who his father is, so he's probably going to get some inside information about where his stock really is. So it's probably a good it's probably a good experience for him to do. The key is, not only did he declare for the draft, he also entered the transfer portal. So if he declared for the draft and didn't enter the portal, I'd say this dude lost his mind. But he entered the draft. He's going to enter the portal, and that's where he's going to find his next home. The real question is going to be, who's going to take him? He played Pac-12 basketball with limited minutes with a health condition. I don't see a Power 5 team coming in. I shouldn't even say Power 5. It's like Power 3. I don't see a Power 3 team coming in and Power 3 conference team coming in and offering him the world with those numbers. I see him going to a mid-major where he can be the guy, which may help him in the future.
Oh, okay. And I thought you meant an NBA team when you were saying
No one.
Well, and he could also just go back to USC. Like, that's on the table too. Just because you enter the transfer portal does not mean you have to leave the school. So he still has that. It's a good point though, Houdini. He can go see where he's at. They're going to tell him, yeah, not this year. But I think this is part of LeBron's scheme here, part of LeBron's end game. LeBron wants to play with Bronny. This is kind of seeing where he's at, what he's got to work with. I would like to see him ball out at like a mid-major, like a Wichita State or something random like that. Get his draft stock up. Maybe sign somewhere next year.
But you just brought up a good point, D-Paul. And it's one thing that I don't like about LeBron is that I think that he controls the NBA a little bit too much. And I don't like that. What are you looking at me like that for?
Why don't you like that?
I don't like when a player dictates a league.
He doesn't.
Well, the fact that he definitely probably had some influence on this decision for his son.
Would you agree with that? That's his kid, though.
But
nothing's happened with Bronny. Like, nothing's happened. The only thing that you can say is...
I'm just saying that I think that he had some influence on this decision for his son to declare for the NBA draft. I think there's no denying in that his father did provide some insight. And I think that if he does get drafted, it's because his father is LeBron James. And LeBron James is going to want to play with him and make this big story. And yeah, he's dictating
if he gets drafted
the NBA.
This
you can't
year,
tell me he's not.
If he gets drafted this year, I'll agree with you on that, Jedi. But if he doesn't get drafted or like there's no interest in him, you know, I can't see it.
Let me address your thing in twofolds because you have like 2 points. One is I can declare for the NBA draft.
Did like, you just declare for the NBA draft?
No, but like I'm like
it's not
like,
gonna make sense.
No, I know. I'm just saying like yeah, like anybody can declare for the NBA draft. So like I could technically declare and read on some website that my name's there, which would be awesome.
On X.
Okay, yeah, well, now news. That I know that, first off, didn't
do
know
not
that,
submit
two,
my name.
But I also am going to submit Houdini.
Yeah, no, don't do that, dude. Like, it's like Harry Potter. You put me in the Goblet of Fire. You know what I mean? Like, that's so shitty.
They're gonna expect you at the NBA practices
at the combine, dude. I will tell you, I will bang threes.
They're gonna expect you.
Yeah, I'll bang threes. Now that vertical is gonna be tough. Probably put on like, I don't know. I'll put Heelys on for like my sprinting or something. There but so yeah, anyone can really enter the draft. Where you say that LeBron is dictating the league, it's I think he's doing a really good job of not doing that this year. I think he's doing a very good job of pushing the attention away from him and more onto Anthony Davis with the Lakers, right? Like, I think he's doing a really good job staying out of the limelight this year. As for playing with his son, let's just say I'm the Bulls and they're a play-in team, right? If I'm the Bulls and I know for a fact I get LeBron for 2 years, I'm drafting Bronny and I don't give a flying shit who has a problem with the fact that I'm drafting Bronny and I'm signing LeBron. I get LeBron for 2 years.
And that's what I'm saying. That if he gets drafted after putting up the season that he did, yes, he's talented. Any player who plays D1 basketball is talented. But like, this is the upper echelon of athletes in the NBA. After putting up a season like that, if he gets drafted, LeBron 100% is going to be going wherever he gets drafted by. There's no doubt about it.
This year or next year, but I've said it before, he's not getting drafted. He's not getting
drafted. We'll see. It's definitely going to be a storyline that's going to continue to grow, especially in the anticipating days of the NBA draft, but we'll make sure to keep you up to date with that. Drop it down in the comments, though. What do you think about this whole situation? Because there are two sides to this that people have that I've been reading all over social media. Sticking with college basketball, though, here, March Madness did end, men's and women's. We'll talk about men's first. UConn was on top. Houdini, this is who you picked in the beginning when we were doing our March Madness preview. How'd you like them in the finals? Or the championship?
I mean, the Final Four, the Elite Eight, they were exactly what they were advertised as. I watched them a bunch of times this year, obviously, because they're in the Big East. They were the clear-cut best team in college basketball all year. Caravan, Klingon, Newton, Spencer, Diarra, like they were absolutely loaded. And like the comparisons start right away. Who would win? The Villanova 2016 or 2018 team or the UConn team in 2024? And I think it's kind of a poor comparison because I really think you need to look at who would really win. Take the back-to-back champs and compare them. The Florida team in 06-07, and then the UConn team 23-24. So that's really where the comparison is. But I thought they were phenomenal all tournament. Won every game by double digits. Handled Alabama, which gave them a run, which I thought was the only tough matchup that they saw. And Zach Edey, to me, for Purdue, just flew up draft boards for me. I think he was projected to go second round. Now he's projected top 20, putting up 37 points against Klingon. Klingon's projected to go top 10. So the performance he had was great. Purdue just didn't have enough supporting players to be able to kind of facilitate around him. I think he scored 37 of like his team's 56 or 60 or whatever it was. But 60, the UConn, but the UConn team was just fully complete. Dan Hurley has them firing on all cylinders. And then every single timeout they came out and every play was just drawn up to perfection. They executed every single play they deserved last year. They deserved this year even more. But, and Deepaw, when you're done giving your thing, I have a really, really good question for you.
Sure. And I'll be brief because you hit all the points I was going to bring up too. They were the best team. Like the teamwork that they played with was unparalleled. It truly, truly was, you know, impressive to watch, even though the game was at freaking 9:20 tip off. That's just absolutely absurd. I'm old now. Like who the hell can stay up for that entire game? And what a strategy as well by the UConn staff and Hurley. Usually, you know, you want to take away the team's best player, their best asset, and take away Edie. They kind of did the opposite. They said, all right, Edie's going to eat. He'll get his. If he beats us by scoring 2 points around the basket, you know, 30 or 50 times, however many points it's going to take for him to do it, so be it. But, you know, nobody else is going to beat us, though. And they locked everybody else down. I think, what, they hit 1-3 or 0-3s in the game, Purdue. So just the defense, the team absolutely deserved it. They were head and shoulders above any other team in that tournament.
That is an unbelievable point, is if you can defend the 3-point line, a bunch of twos aren't going to kill you.
Right. So who cares if Zach completely dominates? And you're right. I think Zach Edey, you know, I don't know if he'll be first round. I hope he is, because, you know, in, you know, the early 2000s NBA, he's a lottery pick. He's a top five pick just because of the center's there. And, you know, center's been devalued so much now. But I think, and Danny Hurley even came out and said it, if he's not an NBA player, I don't know what an NBA player is.
Yeah, no, he's really
not saying he's going to be like all pro, but like he's going to be a decent player. He's not going to be Jokic out there, but he's going to be a solid contributor on a good team.
Yeah, I mean, Yao Ming was really good.
Right, right.
Now, my question to you, and Jedi, I'm sorry if you had this written down, but I need to ask this to him. How shocked were you reading the news about Calipari leaving Kentucky?
Initially, very, just because, you know, I'm not tapped into Big Blue Nation here, but I knew he was up for his contract, but I just didn't think that they would get rid of Cal just because all the recruits that he would bring in, and maybe he just got soured, or they got soured by all those early exits. I think that's ultimately what, you know, kind of did him in. I'm curious if he didn't get the contract or a contract offer or not one that he liked, and that's why he bolted to Arkansas. Going to Arkansas is, I think, an even bigger story too. Like of all the squads, goes to Arkansas.
I think he's familiar with the SEC. I think he likes being in the SEC. I think he absolutely
Kentucky.
I think he turns that program around really fast because it's Cal, yeah,
just like he has everywhere. Yep.
And I do think Kentucky did need a new. He said it. They need a new voice. I agree. I don't think his style has worked. You can't win with 19-year-olds anymore. Like you need 20, 21.
That too. That he needed to look at it, and I guess he did some inner reflection and decided he's going to do it elsewhere.
Women's March Madness came to an end too. Caitlin Clark was defeated by South Carolina. I just have a quick question: was Caitlin Clark's legacy affected by this? She obviously was unbelievable in this game. She played really well. She had a great, fantastic season, broke records, broke viewership records due to her credit, but she never won. Does that affect her legacy at all for you?
It does not for me. She's obviously the best player on the floor. And when she gets going, like when she's hot, my goodness, it's Steph Curry type hot. Like she steps back from 26 feet. Do I think the championship would have like sealed it as the GOAT of women's basketball? Yes, it would have sealed it 100%. I still think she's the GOAT. She has the points record, you know, so I don't think it's affected. She's the clear-cut number one pick, and she's going to go tear it up in the WNBA too, and she's going to make ridiculous money in endorsements.
Does it affect her legacy? Yes, I think it at even just a little bit. Let's just say it that way. So tiny bit affects her legacy, but her legacy, you brought up the viewership numbers, Jedi. Mm-hmm. That's her legacy, being completely generational type talent for boys and girls too, looking up to her. completely transforming and fixating a nation. I believe they did more than the men's game. There may be other reasons for that, but they did more than the men's national championship game. I think ultimately that's her legacy, is being a transformative player and being the Steph Curry of the women's game.
I mean, either way you look at it, you mentioned it. She did change the game for the good. So, I mean, either way you look at it, I think Caitlin Clark did herself pretty well.
The reason why her legacy isn't affected is because when you do 4 million more viewers than the men's college championship for the first time ever, and we talked about it last podcast, with the amount of bets that came in for women's college basketball over the last three games of Iowa compared to the Masters, World Series, X, Y, and Z, it's unbelievable what she's done for the game. But I will say, the number one reason why that viewership is different, I think it's the first year. I could be wrong. I need to be fact checked. I think it's the first year that women's ended before men's. Normally, women's has ended after. Two, that was at Sunday at 3 o'clock.
Sunday. There you
compared
go.
To Monday at 9:20 Eastern.
9:20 tip. Right. Yep. So like that obviously affects it. And then not only to mention, you have the absolute all time scorer versus an undefeated South Carolina team who is unbelievably good. I watched the entire game. I thought it was a really good basketball game. But final thought on college basketball. There was some guy that went back and watched Pistol Pete's Maravich's every single collegiate game.
What he would average?
What he would have averaged if the three-point line existed. Dude, he would have averaged 55 points a game.
I was gonna say, I think it was over 50. Yep.
That's Pistol, absurd.
Man. Yeah. Have you ever watched his highlights?
It's unbelievable. He did not miss.
And the passing and dribbling was unbelievable too.
Well, if you look at Caitlin Clark's record, who has the most points in women's college basketball, the woman before her, when she played, three-pointers did not exist. So she's claiming that she's actually the GOAT, and she's getting discredited. Do you agree with her? I'm being honest. I actually don't know. I would have to fact check. I don't have to fact check it. I would just have to look up her name. But if this is the case, I agree with the former person. She is the GOAT and Caitlin isn't. Now, who's more transformative to the sport? Caitlin Clark, hands down. That's no debate for me. But if we're going off someone that three-pointers didn't exist, that's a drastic margin of error there. That's huge. There's no debate there.
No, there's a massive debate.
I don't think so.
Massive debate. Yeah? How many baseball games were played when Babe Ruth played?
I don't even know. To be honest,
Google it, because I'll tell you, it's not 162.
How many is it? Less?
100% is less.
Oh, yeah, okay, so that would make it even more that Babe Ruth is like the GOAT.
But he's not discussed as the GOAT. Ted Williams numbers, all this stuff, like all the home run records, Barry Bonds, all that stuff. Barry Bonds isn't the home run champ then because he played in 175 more games? On this podcast,
that's up for when you really start to analyze things. Like, yes, he's the home run king, 100% statistically wise. But is he the GOAT? That's what you said.
She's the GOAT, and she's the scoring champ, and Barry Bonds has his home run record. You can't. I mean, like, dude, I put the nail in the coffin right there. You're going to tell me that Babe Ruth.
I understand that, but what I'm just trying to get at here is that you're going off of, you said, who's the home run king? That's not a debate. The home run king is Barry Bonds. He has the most home runs. But if you look, he did play more games. And if we look at Hank Aaron has 4,000 more at-bats than Babe Ruth. And obviously there's more to talk about it when you talk about the time periods. The pitching was different. The pitching was definitely harder to hit when Barry Bonds played than when Hank Aaron played and Babe Ruth, all different eras of the sport. And I think you could really talk about that with any sport, the same thing that you talk about when you go against who's better, LeBron or Jordan. It's the same thing. It's two different eras of basketball, different types of players that they're playing against, different teams. So you really could debate that with anything in sports. With what the point you're trying to make is what I'm saying is that with anything in sports, I could say the same thing. Like, not,
I know,
just
but you're agreeing with that woman that's saying, like, well, I didn't have three-pointers.
I think that she's on to something. And I think that she is discredited because I didn't even know who she was. And I
think
that's
wrong. So then Hank Aaron has a gripe as well.
No, because I know who Hank Aaron is. I know that might not make sense.
It makes no sense to me. I'm glad it makes sense for you, though. And that's the only thing that matters. If you can make sense of it, I'm good, dude. Like, I don't need to argue this any further.
Did I make sense at all to you?
No, I've never heard something more stupid, but it makes sense. So, like, makes sense.
I need Deepaw, because Deepaw is the voice of reason here.
I'll be completely honest with you, boys.
He doesn't know what's going on.
Both of you had arguments that were so convoluted, it was like listening to Russian speak right now. All right, I have no idea what you guys are debating at this point. To the original point, I think that lady has sour grapes. Look, you got like the game changed, dude. You lost your record. It happens. You're 50 years old. It happens. All right, someone's gonna beat her record eventually. and during that time, this is a rule many people didn't know about. At that time, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar ran into this as well. Freshmen couldn't play. You could not play as a freshman. You weren't allowed. You played as like a freshman team. That was it. There was no NCAA games.
Jedi, fun fact. Do you know when freshmen were allowed to play? Do you know one incident that do you know the incident that changed the NCAA's mind to allow freshmen to play?
Wait, I know this. I've heard this before. Does it have to do with basketball? Is that the sport?
No.
Okay, maybe I don't. Never mind.
It was Forrest Gump at Alabama.
I could be wrong. I think I'm right, though. I'm pretty sure it was because the Marshall flight went down.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure that's what it was, because their whole team died.
January 8th, 1972, NCAA grants freshman eligibility in football and basketball.
1972?
Yeah. I think that was after Marshall.
I think Marshall was
because it was because of Kareem.
Yeah.
Kareem and Bill Walton at UCLA.
Oh.
Okay. When did the Marshall flight go down? I think it was 69 or 70.
So Dean just lied to us on this podcast. No.
So they got a waiver
to allow
1970. So yeah, I would argue that was the domino effect.
Yeah. All
right.
Talking about a sport now that we don't normally talk about, but they have an eventful tournament coming up. The Masters are going to be starting. I believe it's on Sunday. Rory McIlroy, 16th time. Is he finally going to win, you think?
That's a tough question. This field is deep with the LIV golfers coming to town. This was in my top five when we did that draft of top five sporting events. The Masters was my third pick. This is a great tournament. Tiger's in it. Obviously, like I said, you get all the LIV golfers. Scheffler is the clear cut favorite. I think Rory might break through this time. He's been playing really good golf as of late.
You know, I've fallen into this trap with Rory so many times. I just don't know if he'll ever put four rounds together at Augusta. Do I want to see it? Yeah. I think it would be cool to see him finally get the green jacket, and I believe his third type of major. I think it's going to be a great tournament. I think seeing John Rahm come back too. You know, the former champion was all the talk when he defected over to LIV for a boatload of cash. And now he's back to defend his title. What other storyline? Oh, Tiger, of course. Tiger's back, you know, and I know in my mind, I know Tiger probably doesn't have a shot, but I didn't think he had a shot when he won it out of nowhere, whenever that was, 2019 or whatever. So if he can,
if he makes the cut, is it a success?
Oh, absolutely. It's a success if he can play four healthy rounds consecutively. Will Zalatoris, who's coming back from back surgery from last year and who's a sneaky sleeper pick as well to win the tournament. He played a practice round with Tiger yesterday or today and said he hit every single shot pure. He said if this would have been a scoring round, he would have been like way under par, which is like to say something. Obviously, it's not set up for you know, the tournament, but still, Tiger knows that course like the back of his hand. So if he can stay healthy and just not have like a leg or a back injury, I think he's got a legitimate shot to be like top 20, top 25. But I just don't know if he can stay healthy, boys.
Dude, if you're golfing on Sunday and you're like 8 under, your top five, let's just say the leader's at like 12 under, and you see Tiger at like 7 or 8 under, and you're going into Sunday, how bad is your ass sweating?
Not as much as it used to, because a lot of these players, they're so young that they know how great Tiger is, and they've seen the highlights in not high definition. Like, they know how great he was, and they've heard all the stories, but they also saw Tiger in the fall. Like, they were there. They watched him duff chips. They watched him go bunker to bunker, like in a tournament. So I think a little bit you see Tiger at Augusta in the Sunday Red, maybe a little, but I think that goes away pretty quick, you know, when he, you know, blades one over into to 3 off the tee. Like, he still just mishits too many shots right now. So I hope it doesn't happen, but you know, he's still a little shaky right now.
We'll make sure to keep up to date with the Masters. That's going to start on Sunday. But before we get out of here, we want to do one little 1 minute, 1 minute each of Pass the Chips. Let's start this. My Pass the Chips today is something very simple, and I think it's worth noting. Let me preference first by saying I'm not buying in. I'm not buying in. But Giancarlo Stanton's ability to all of a sudden hit the inside fastball is getting me excited. Because last year, I think that he might have swung and missed. I think it was like 0 for 90 on any fastball inside that was above 92 miles an hour. And he is batting like 400 when pitchers have done that this season so far. So clearly skinny Stanton is someone to be scared of, but I'm not buying in. That's all.
Last year, if the objective was to hit a weak ground ball to third base, he was the best. But I have a hot take here. Yeah, I have a hot take here. I think you should go back to Mike.
I remember that transition.
Skinny Mike.
Deepon, passion you to the chips.
So the Pittsburgh Pirates, Houdini brought it up, are having a great year, 9-2 or 9-3 after today's loss to the Detroit Tigers to what they were up, I believe.
3-1 in the ninth.
3-1 in the ninth. And David Bednar, our two-time All-Star closer, comes in and promptly proceeds to not throw a strike. Walks and hits the bases loaded, gives up 3 or 4 runs. Pirates lose 5-2, 5-3. But what happened, though, when Bednar got yanked really, really pissed me off. He got a chorus of boos from the Pittsburgh faithful, all 10,000 of them out there braving it on, enjoying a nice Tuesday night. My issue with that is I get it. I've booed at sporting events, but you do not boo a fellow Yinzer who's having a bad run of it. He's from Pittsburgh. He's clearly the best option they got in the bullpen. He probably shouldn't be out there. He had a little bit of should have been an IL stint, but he just toughed it out and came back. I think something's wrong with him. But I'm so torn on this, and I want your guys' opinion on it too. I know you pay for the ticket, but booing your hometown guy, what do you think?
I hate it.
And I will give Rowdy Tellez, just signed him for Milwaukee, defended the living crap out of David Bednar post-game too, came over and said, look, we're having a great season. We're a good ball club. Don't do that to your own. And he's been there for 11 games, and I love the guy already.
Hey,
They booed Derek Jeter.
Yeah, I need Derek to pivot. Sorry, either. Jedi. Go ahead.
They booed Derek Jeter. You can boo anybody. That's the way I look at it. Was it uncalled for? Yeah, because it's like the guy's been very successful. He's been an all-star. It's like you don't get it done every time. Like, what are we booing for?
But exactly. Like, this dude has been a stud for us for 2 years. Like, yeah.
But if you're asking, should he have been booed? Like, I don't have a problem with it because you're not. And Derek Jeter got booed. Anybody can get booed, regardless if it's your hometown or not.
A big fan of booing teams. If, like, you know, the Rangers come out, they're down 4-0 in the first, you're getting booed off the ice. I'm fine with that.
Opponents, boo your opponents. Totally fine.
Good with that. In an individual sport, I think it's a little different. I'm not really a big fan of booing. I'd rather come up with a good chirp for that one person. Make sure I sit close enough to the dugout when Bednar's coming off, you know, wherever their AAA team is, or, you know.
Indianapolis.
Yeah, have a good time in Indianapolis, you bum. Like, that would have been better.
Pass the chips, Dina. Here you go, bud.
So, yeah, my pass the chips is actually movie related. Texted Deepaw this the other day. Jedi, I just want a yes or no question, then I'll give my thoughts. Jedi, did you see the movie Wonka?
I did not, and I am going to, but I've just been so busy.
Okay. So if you get past the 11-minute, 12-second mark, you beat me.
Did you fall asleep, Dino?
No, I shut it off abruptly. Dude, no. Disney whiffed on this so bad by making it PG, kid-related. There was so much story to why Wonka got to success. It could have had – even when you watch the first one, there was some dark stuff that happened in it, right? Like, it was, it was, you know, it was a really, really good movie. Disney, with their wokeness, comes up and just absolutely destroys what I think is one of the best movies of all time, especially around Christmas time. This movie was a complete miss.
That's unfortunate. But make sure to follow us on social media at Hot Shots Podcast to keep up to date with all of your sports news and to hear some cool rankings at Hot Shots Podcast. But until then, we'll talk to you next time.